Thanks, Dolores. You know, when Dolores talks about me being the boss, I always wondered about that. For those of you who are just getting to know Dolores, you will find out very quickly that she takes charge, and things move, and they roll along, and maybe that's one of the reasons you don't have to call very often. She's a great person. I really almost hate to interrupt table talk because it sounds like people were interacting so well and talking about things, and that's always really good. So I won't take a lot of time to talk about some things, but first of all, I really do want to thank each of you for taking the time today to come and spend a day talking about things. And you know, some of us who are native Minnesotans might think that rural diversity has more to do with Lutheran Norwegians and Lutheran Germans, and in my case, German Catholics where I grew up. In my hometown, which was all of 500 people, we were really divided. On the one hill was the Catholic Church Hill, and on the other hill was the Lutheran Church Hill. And believe it or not, in the 40s and the 50s, it was difficult to get those churches to even break bread with each other and share services together. And there was always talk about Father Simon coming down from the hill, and Father Simon would always come down, I think maybe once a day, and stop in the local bar and have a cigar and a pop. Or was it a shot? I can't remember. And there was always talk about Father Simon. And later on, when I was actually returned from Vietnam and was interested in some politics, and I actually ran for office, and in the major community, the county seat town, my opponent had the audacity to suggest to someone on the other side of town, on the Catholic side of town, that he would never sit down and have an ecumenical service with them. Well, the next day I got a call from a leader in the Catholic community, and he said, "Send the brochures over. I think we're going to elect you." And they did. But I suppose that's enough of what I would call middle-class Minnesota diversity issues, but those things were real, too. This conference is about diversity in rural Minnesota. And a lot of ways, I think it's really also about education, and it's about employment and equal opportunity. I think beside the obvious economic necessity, education and employment are important in so many other ways. Education prepares you for life. Work kind of organizes life. And I think both provide the structure and the discipline that are required and the skills to participate fully in communities. Both give people, I think, the self-esteem that they need to be good parents and probably good role models for children. We can make a lot of changes. We can make education and jobs more available. We can do a better job of skills training and making it more available. We can provide more money for higher education. And I suspect that we can have partnerships between higher education and K-12 and businesses. And we also can upgrade our curriculum and also employ technology and all of those things. But sometimes the answers need to come from what I would call deeper sources. Sometimes the answers have to come from the values and the stirrings and the voice that speak to us, I hope, in each of us. Sometimes we have to reach down inside ourselves, I think, and examine the values and the spirit and the soul and probably the truth of human nature. And then, instead of talking about it, we really need to get busy. We have to do what's right in our communities for education, for children. And I think we really have to honor the work that's been done before us, but we also know that we need to build on that. We know that there are gaps that need to be filled if everybody is going to prosper in this world today. You know, we pick up the newspaper every day and we read about Kosovo and the atrocities there that tend to be religious-based. Yesterday and the day before, the Littleton, Colorado situation. Littleton, I happen to have a friend who lives in Littleton. That community is not unlike Apple Valley or Maple Grove. But we look at those situations, and I will never understand what motivates or what intrudes in people to do that kind of senseless killing. I don't know how bad it can get if we don't recognize our common humanity and our common goals and our common dreams. Sometimes I suspect that we in Minnesota walk around a little smug, and one of our staff people was traveling in Italy not too long ago, and having some conversations with an Italian mother who said that she would be really afraid to send her son or daughter to the United States because of the guns and the drugs and the killings and so on. So in some ways, we're not presenting such an image as the U.S., but I would also take it a little closer to home. I live in Waconia, and about a month and a half ago, Waconia turned away Catholic Charities and the residential academy that they're trying to locate in a rural or suburban rural setting. And one prominent citizen in that community said to me, we really don't want that type here. I don't know what, I didn't pry with him on the issue, but I can assure you the issue wasn't zoning and it wasn't land use. The issue was racial and I think economic class related. And that's really unfortunate. So I hope that we're not smug about some of these things. As you know, this community in this country is a great experiment in multi-religious, multi-racial, multi-ethnic ethnic self-government. And I think that we're still committed to the ideas that it represents, and I hope all of you are. These questions really come to the core of who we are and what makes Minnesotans. We have to do more, I think, to bring our communities together. And one of the keys to that is education. Education, whether you capture it in math or reading or technical skills, education is really without racial, ethnic, economic status, or any other bias. The beauty of education is that it's yours and you own it outright. You can't be denied the use of them, or you can be denied the use, but you can't be denied because you can't use them or you don't possess them. I really have been somewhat disappointed this year with the Minnesota legislature. We have a $4 billion surplus, and we seem to be caught up in this system of seeing who can give it back the fastest, and the end game is going to be who can give the most back, as opposed to who has the best vision for this state and the future of this state. And as one of my staff people said, they appear to be steering through rain-soaked windshields. They can't see what is obvious today. And what's obvious today, in my view, is that we need to make huge investments in education and economic development. And I suspect that we have to put people first. We have to shift from a thing-oriented society to a people-oriented society, and I think we forget that. A society can flounder in the face of moral and spiritual bankruptcy as easily as it can financial bankruptcy. Elie Wiesel said that the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. And indifference is really the enemy. Well, I say to you, why does any of this matter outside of the pure decency of it? And it matters because rural Minnesota is going to become a lot more diverse. It matters because the viability of our communities is going to depend on the acceptability of that diversity and the capacity of that diverse population to work and live and achieve in those communities, your communities. Are we ready for that? I don't know. But not if we don't link educational opportunity, employment opportunity, and equal opportunity. That job begins with each of us doing our part, whether we're in education, in government, or private industry, or simply a volunteer somewhere in the process. It has to begin with us. And I just want to thank you all for taking your time to have an important conversation today, and I hope that it leads to Dolores' favorite word, action. Thank you very much.
Chancellor has agreed to spend a few minutes answering questions. If somebody has any questions for him? Questions, comments? This was not a silent group this morning, Chancellor. It was like brain fatigue and food fatigue. Huh? Thank you again very much, Chancellor. We're up to 1 o'clock. Where's Elsa? Oh, she's downstairs recording. Okay, could you get her back up here, please? Thank you. This is Elsa's piece. We did not have dessert because the afternoon, again, I remind you from this morning, is Dev Bars. Ask me how we like those as opposed to. No questions for Chancellor at all. I mean, you may not have a chance, some of you, to ask him questions again anytime soon this legislative session. We're glad to have him here. Yes, Lynn.
Well, I think, first of all, if we're talking about reaching out more in a diverse way in the educational system in Minsky, I think that all of the campuses understand, first of all, that what's one of my priorities, that we are going to have, first, a more diverse workforce in terms of faculty and support and staff, because that's a critical element of what we need to do to attract a more diverse population. And so we need to do that. The other piece that I think is been critical for us is to spend a lot more time getting aligned with the work community and the industry and the business community and economic development in this state. It is a lot easier to attract people and to educate people if we've got tracks identified for them in communities and in job opportunities. And we're spending a lot of investment in that. We are also going to spend a lot more effort in the urban communities reaching to the underserved population. That's an objective of ours as well. We are probably going to do a lot more of that through the two-year institutions because they have an advantage in geography and in the locational aspects of that. But that also then says we have to make programming available and support services available. One of the disappointments I have with this legislative session is that they paid little notice to the fact that we ask for a lot more counseling and support services for our students. You can talk to students on any campus. It's almost the number one or number two issue behind financial aid or tuition that they will talk about.
My question to you is, education for what? Because as you look around the world, not only in a historical context, but even in the present conditions in Kosovo, it is the highly educated who have been and continue to be systematically destroying humanity.
Well, I don't want to get into a discussion about Kosovo and educated versus non-educated, because I think there are 600 years of history there that I don't even begin to understand or can interpret. I think our job, first and foremost, is to educate individuals so that they can have a quality of life that they deserve and want. Second, I think we educate in a way that allows individuals to participate in the community. I think both of those are critical elements of what we do and what we need to do. We need to give them those skills that allow that opportunity. And I think that it is a much broader challenge today than it was 5 years ago, and certainly a much broader challenge than it was 10 years ago. Today, everybody needs some education beyond where we are in high school in order to succeed. We need to fulfill that role for as many of those people as we possibly can.
Mr. Chancellor, I know you are trying to tackle the problems of diversity at your level. However, the problems initiate at a much earlier age. Example, we have two public high schools locally. One of them had two kids who brought guns to shoot up some officials last week. And the other one had the trench coats and also kids with the Federalist flags. And there was car key scratching, whatever they call it, at our high schools. These are the kids that would move to your colleges, 37 of them. That means you are ready to take them. Don't you think you should be tackling the problems at that level with the parents? Because unless you cooperate with us, the parents, I think your efforts would be futile. Wouldn't it be so? Thank you.
Yeah, I couldn't... I don't know that I have good answers for the social ills that are in our high schools and that are demonstrated in Littleton. There's a lot more to what needs to go on in the community. Now, part of higher education's role is community-based. It is not specifically education-based or research-based. It is community-based. The question is, what role can we or should we be playing in that community environment, and can we provide the kinds of either secondary or primary support mechanisms that need to be there, and at what point in time do we get asked to do those kinds of things, or do we volunteer to do those things? It is not a problem that we can separate from a family or from the community or from the school, or from higher education. It is a problem we all face, it's a problem we all share, and it's a problem that we all have to find solutions for. And the solutions will not be found in metal detectors and other kinds of things. The solutions really have to be found in what I talked about a little bit here. It's about human relationships. It's about caring for somebody and identifying when it's really important to care. And we don't do that very well.
This is not a question, this is a comment. When you spoke about the surplus that we have here in the state of Minnesota, for months I've been concerned because Minnesotans aren't screaming at the legislature and the governor saying every school district in this state needs money to educate our children. Living here in St. Cloud, we had a horrible fight here in the community to pass a bond levy because we needed that money to teach our children. We make bad choices as adults, and then we turn around and look at our kids and say, why do you act the way that you do? You know, we are the ones who turned America into a country that believes that the more things you have, the better human being you are. Our children did not do that. This is on us. It's on our shoulders. When we talk about the things that happen with children using guns, we're the ones who consistently fight about whether or not we should have gun control, knowing that these bad things are happening all over America. We make no decisions. We allow politicians to tell us what we should think about things that we already know, that common sense tells us, that if people do not lock their guns up, they don't need to have them. Bottom line. That is a common sense approach to a real problem. We know that a majority of the young men who are in prisons today in Minnesota have not graduated from high school. Now, we know this. So why not invest the money where it's going to do the most good? You want to cut your taxes? You figure out how much money it costs to keep somebody in versus the amount of money that it costs to educate them for a year. And you can figure out how to cut your taxes. Our politicians won't talk to us about this. The people in this room and the rest of Minnesotans have to get together and make some real choices about how we want our state to be. And quit going through these things every time there's a crisis. We're going to continue to keep having crises if we don't make some changes in how we do business.
Yeah, I firmly believe that. One of the things that we're going to look back on 1999, and we're going to we ought to give ourselves a collective kick. We have an opportunity. We have an opportunity with this surplus to invest in education. We could even endow it, or some of it, and use the proceeds. And we are not making that investment. And that also means that we're not making investment in economic development in this state. We're not making investments in the viability of rural communities in this state, and we're going to flush that down the tax credit pipeline. I've been a Republican all my life. I believe in fiscal responsibility, but I also believe in investment. This is a time to invest, and we have a great opportunity to do it, and we're not going to do it. That is a failure of leadership in a significant way, and it ought to be a disgrace.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear you speak on just mentioning the two-year colleges, because I'm involved with a technical college locally. My question is, though, in relations to if Minsky, what role Minsky is playing when it comes to both retention, recruitment, and retention of faculty of color, in especially both in whether in rural areas as well as in our institution locally, as well as the role on retention of students of color when they get into our institutions. Because that's one of the bigger issues which end up creating other stereotypes that exist.
I think the answer to the retention issue and the sensitivities about helping and assisting, I think you'll find some campuses that do a pretty good job of that. But I will also say that I think as a system, we probably don't do that very well. We really get bound up probably in the primary function, which is in that classroom exposure kind of environment, and we don't spend enough time on the retention issue. Part of our policy position this year, which is not funded, was to spend a significant amount of money focusing exactly on that retention issue. And it's not only is it the right thing to do for students, it's good business. The best student you got is the one you don't have to recruit. It's the one that's already here. And when you have retention rates that are barely above 50% in some cases, that's not good business. And we need to find a way to invest in that. But it also takes some resources to be able to do that. One more.
I'll try to make it short because I think they make it real short. I'm a culture diversity consultant. And in one occasion, I ended up in a small community, public ed. And they couldn't afford me. So I said I would do a 2-day workshop free. And immediately they took out paper and pencil and got my address and phone number to brief me on that. And I said it was one condition, that 1/3 of the board members attend the training. They weren't sure. They would let me know. I never got called back. That's an indication to me, and many other indicators point to me, that somehow the echelon people at the various institutions are not as serious as we are, or even as you are, about this issue of cultural diversity. And somehow or other, when you mention education, to me, the first mind that enters in my thinking is educate those groups to find this to be a serious matter. And that when we meet in places like this, members of those groups are part of the audience. We've got to reach that point. Thank you.
I agree. I don't know if that deserves a response because I think it was pretty complete in and of itself. I agree fully. But as I said, we need to start somewhere. And today is maybe about starting more than it is anything else. When you're talking, I always try to remember where in Matthew it talks about go forth. And maybe that's what it's about. We need some disciples.